I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before.
Two brothers.
Harley's got all the facts tonight. Jasper is a trivia weapon. Get out of his way.
A bunch of trivia questions.
Trivia is cool, and that makes these guys two cool guys.
Everything's on the line in today's episode of
How Do They Keep Getting It Right?
Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump?
Yes, giddy up. It is indeed trivia time. My name is Jasper, one of your two co-hosts here on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. Joining me is my brother and the other co-host, Harley.
How are
you? Mate, good. Are you having a good day?
I'm doing very well. You're always starting with giddy up, and it makes me want to say yee-haw every episode.
Well, when we were recording the early sort of like prototype episodes, I showed them to a few friends, and they're like, you should have like a little like intro that kind of is distinctly you, and I realized that I'd gotten the voiceover people to record giddy up, it's trivia time for some reason. I was like, that's a fun little line, so I was like, maybe I can do that. And whenever it goes to a tie break, he says giddy up, it's trivia time, so it's like a little bit of symmetry. That's what I was thinking anyway.
I at work, it's not like I don't do it every time, but I quite often will greet air traffic control or the cabin when they call with ahoy.
Oh, that's good.
And I had a flight attendant call up with aloha, and then the next time that she called, I responded with annyeonghaseyo.
What's that?
That's hello in Korean.
Ah.
She was very confused.
It seems like a pretty wordy way to say something quite common like hello.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure annyeonghaseyo is... maybe we'll just double check that.
Get firmly
It is hello. It is hello. Okay. Yeah.
Is there like a high equivalent, you know?
I don't know. I've just got a... It's for going to Korean barbecue predominantly.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Do you have a fun fact to kick us off today, Holly?
Yeah. So I wanted to share with our... calling it the listener base really makes it sound broad, doesn't it?
It's large.
I wanted to share with them a fact that I know I've already told you.
Okay.
I picked up in Bangladesh that the circle on the Bangladeshi flag is just slightly off center, only enough to annoy you if you look out for it. And I know that you know that. It's so that when it's animated in flying motion, it looks like it's in the center. But if you've got OCD and you've got a flag book or something, have a look at that. It's really annoying, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and it stands out if you compare it to like the Japanese flag, for instance, which is sort of similar in that it's got like a red circle in the middle. But you're right, so it's in motion, and when it's swaying in the breeze, it sort of looks like it's in the middle.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the vexillological flag for everyone else listening but you. The vexillological flag for you, the Danish flag was designed in 1219.
Is it the oldest flag in the world?
It is. It is. It was adopted in 1625, but that's how old it dates to.
It does seem kind of old. Like back in the day before there were stars and Union Jacks, it's just like a couple of lines and some red.
Exactly.
It's pretty basic.
Before, like, you had, like, the globe, like, embossed with a little slogan around it, or like a sun with a face on it.
Do you think all the other Scandinavian countries were like the same sort of flag designing, like, webinar, and they were like, oh, what's Denmark doing? Oh, yeah, just copy him. He's pretty good. And, like, they just are like, yeah, we're just going the way Denmark's going. We thought that looked pretty sharp. Would have just sort of flicked the colours around. So, let's get lunch.
We're famous for IKEA, and so we've used their colours.
Yeah. It is.
That's why IKEA made it those colours. But anyway, have you got a fact for me?
I do have a fun fact. There's one Australian Prime Minister who has spent time in jail. Do you want to have a guess at who that is?
Like, committed a crime.
Well, I think that's normally why people go to jail. Well, it wasn't just visiting. It's not Monopoly.
It'd be an early one.
Yeah.
And it'd be one that I've never heard of. Oh, it's not like Francis Ford or someone that was a very short-serving one.
No, it's not like he was a short-serving prime minister when they figured out that he went to jail for smuggling meth, like they kicked him out. No, it was John Curtin. So he went to jail for 3 days for attempting to dodge a conscription. But ironically, he led Australia through the bulk of World War II. So that was kind of interesting that, like, he kind of...
There you go.
Initially, dodged conscription, but is now sort of remembered as a famous wartime prime minister. So he actually died in office only 6 weeks before the end of the war in the Pacific in World War II. So,
there you go.
Interesting sort of fact, I thought.
Bloody most of them, they should be locked up in jail and stuff, hey? Like, most criminals down in Canberra.
Mate, they should have locked ScoMo up, you know, bloody crimes against the nation. You know what I mean? Yeah. All right, well, without further ado, and there has been much ado, let's go to the rules.
Harley and Jasper have nominated 3 special subjects to be quizzed on by the other person. The 3 special subject round will feature 5 questions for each contestant. The trivia champ will be the person who answers the most questions correctly by the end of the game.
So those are the rules of engagement. Harley, which three topics will I be hearing questions about on today's episode?
You'll be hearing about media, Simpsons, and Girl Boss.
Yeah, I kind of just thought that, you know, maybe we don't have enough sort of questions skewed towards women.
Yep.
You know, we're both men, so we've got 100% male employee base on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
That in and of itself is a little bit problematic, shall we say.
I don't think it's problematic at all. In fact, I think we're doing a really good job to like reduce the gender pay gap with all of the time that we're dedicating here without making any money
that's
at all.
That's actually true. But, yeah, very true. All right, well, no, that's obviously all a joke. We just wanted to sort of mix it up a little bit.
Nah.
Some questions about women we thought could be a bit interesting. We've got the categories for you, Harley, are Roger. Oh, screwed it up. Because you've done a Girl Boss question, I've immediately cancelled out with five questions about old man called Roger.
Damn.
So your three categories are Roger, I'm dreading it, and please explain.
Round one.
Without further ado, I think kick us off with media.
Without further ado again? Okay,
oh, yeah, sure thing. Jeez, gotta get a new line. Well, you've rattled me with giddy up. I'm trying to think of new catchphrases.
Okay, well, we'll start off with a catchphrase question in media, shall we?
Let's go.
What American news anchor was known for his departing catchphrase, and that's the way that it is, followed by the date of his broadcast?
Is this the reason that in Bruce Almighty he closes with, and that's the way the cookie crumbles?
Quite likely, yeah. And like Stay Classy San Diego.
Yeah,
like,
similar.
All these things are based on this very famous sign-off, I reckon.
All right, well, when I think of American newsreaders, I think of Ted Koppel, I think of Walter Cronkite, and that's about it. Mort Krim is the other
Mort
one.
Mort Krim.
From Detroiters, one of our favorite TV shows. Now, I think I'm going to go with... Walter Cronkite's like the old-timey, like really famous one. I think I'm going to go with Ted Koppel, though.
Oh, Jasper. It's Walter Cronkite.
I do this all the time on this podcast, where I nail it down to two really solid options and go the wrong one.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate slip-up. But no, certainly Walter Cronkite. I was kind of amazed. You forget how much kind of happened in the 20th century in America. Like, to think that he was covering World War II up to, like...
The Spice Girls. Yeah.
No, not quite.
No,
like,
okay.
It retired by the Spice Girls point, but up until, like, Reagan, kind of. Like, it was... He had a solid chunk of the Cold War.
That's a really, like, disparate part. Like, lots of disparate parts of history there. Lots going on.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. But he also was the only non-NASA recipient of NASA's Ambassador of Exploration Award.
Why was that? Why did he get that?
I don't know. He was an Ambassador of Exploration.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's move on. Do you think if I get 0 out of 5 in the media questions, I'll get fired as a journalist?
I guess there's only one way to find out. Hey?
Yeah, let's go. Tanking.
Okay. Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein were reporters for what daily newspaper when they consistently broke groundbreaking investigative coverage of the Watergate scandal?
I'm pretty sure this was in the Washington Post. And the reason I know is I read Heartburn. Have you read that book by Nora Ephron?
No.
It's really good. It's by the... She's probably best known as a screenwriter, Nora Ephron.
Mm-hmm.
But she wrote this novel, and it's semi-autobiographical, and it's about her marriage to Carl Bernstein. And it's like sort of quite thinly veiled, is what people say, that it's a thinly disguised novel or something. But it's essentially dramatizes their marriage breakdown. And it's really funny. It's a really tight... Like, I read it in like 2 or 3 days. It's really short. A lot of fun. But anyway, I remember researching Carl Bernstein a little bit after I read that, because like, who was this guy that... allegedly was not a very nice guy. I don't even think allegedly, but yeah, I think they were writers for the Washington Post.
Absolutely correct. You have not lost your job. Well done.
Sweet.
The Washington Post, and they were noted for like having a lot of anonymous sources, most notably
Deep Throat.
Yeah. So he was later revealed to be the deputy director of the FBI, and I was just kind of deep diving this.
He was the main informant for Watergate, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That was kind of what he was famous for.
Yeah, Mark Felt was his name. And I was reading the way that they... Because obviously phones were being tapped left, right and center.
Yeah.
And he was the deputy of the FBI at this point.
Mm.
It's like second in command. And their way of... they would meet at a certain car park. And their way of contacting one another... Do you know about this?
No.
It was actually Woodward. It wasn't Bernstein. But Bernstein, what he would Woodward, what he would do was he would move a particular flower pot on his balcony to signal that he wanted to meet Felt. And what Felt would do was he would deliver his newspaper to Bernstein's address, his New York Times, circle the 20th page's page number, and then write, like, draw an analog clock with the time, apparently. Wow. And the really spooky thing about it, from Mr. FBI man to Bob Woodward, was Bob Woodward's balcony wasn't actually visible to the street.
Wait, so...
So how Mark Felt kept seeing this flower pot moving?
Yeah.
He didn't really know.
Wow. So as in he had, like, some camera or something.
Well, that's the thought, that he had some sort of a lookout kind of surveillance for
it. Wow. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Which, I mean, to be fair, the FBI were probably doing a pretty good job of trying to work out how Bob Woodward and Bernstein were working out all of these, like, secretive things.
Look at journalism now. Look how far I've come. Woman's gross find in toilet will leave you stung.
Stunned? I want to click. I want to click.
Click, 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 click. Yeah. How far we've come.
Well done. So you're on one from two now.
Yep.
Question three. What Chinese app is the world's largest standalone mobile app?
Ooh.
Surpassing its close competitor in 2018.
Mm. Yeah. I know this. It's Flappy, but no. It's... I think this is... It's called, like, either Weibo or WeChat, I think. I think it's one of those. And yet again, I've set myself up on a one in two shot, I think. And possibly I'm going to get it wrong. I'm going to go with... is it called Weibo? I think it's called... Yeah, I'm going to say WeChat. Because we do chat.
Exactly.
All of us
we
chat.
We do chat, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely correct.
Yes.
And so that was, I was going to follow on. Have you ever had it, WeChat, on your phone?
I have never used it, no. Have you used it?
Yeah, well, I once worked at a company where a lot of the customer base was Chinese and the ownership was Chinese, and so...
Which company?
Well, it was a flying school.
Oh, right,
and,
okay.
And so, like, they used it like it was WhatsApp.
Oh, sure,
and stuff. And so, I had it for a while. But there, like, in China, you can use it to pay for things. You can use it for basically everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Okay, two from three, kicking along nicely in media. Actor Diurna is commonly credited by scholars as being the first newspaper ever published. Latin term, Actor Diurna, and dating back to 59 BCE. How do you translate Actor Diurna
Actor Diurna.
Into English.
Okay, yeah. Well, diurnal, daily, I reckon, is possibly that one there. Thinking back to year 7 Latin. Actor. Something daily. Doing, like acting, like to do. Action. Acting. I'm just trying to think of like other words that are related to actor. It's spelled A-C-T-A?
A-C-T-A, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, something daily. Daily... What's the one in Superman? The Daily Planet?
The Bugle?
The Daily is Daily Bugle... Daily Bugle's Spider-Man, hey?
Is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Daily... I think Daily Planet is the one Clark Kent works for.
Why do they... Yeah, why do they all have media backgrounds? What is it with media people and being absolute superheroes? Well,
because I think media people are, like, in the center of, like, when big stuff goes on, but maybe, like, a not suspected, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Maybe, I don't know, like, I guess it's, like, if he works in, like, a factory and then suddenly there's a big crime, like, how's he going to get there? It's possibly out of town, the factory.
On the conveyor belt.
Yeah, true. How could I forget?
Actor Diurna,
I'm
Jasper.
Stalling, yeah. Actor Diurna. Let's say the Daily... The Daily Deed.
Oh, there are a few things that I was going to I was going to accept, but...
Too far off?
I think deed, like daily happenings, daily doings, daily occurrences...
I was like, I actually kind of said that stuff, but yeah.
I reckon, I thought, yeah, I reckon I'll give you a half point for
that. Yeah, I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah, okay. And I've just realized, just before we set up, I wrote the last question. I've realized it's also a translate from a language you don't speak to English question.
Excellent.
And I'm not apologizing for it.
They're a lot of fun.
So let's say that you're in an Italian restaurant, Jasper.
Yeah, I am right now. That's where we're recording from.
Yeah. Yeah, Mamma Mia.
No, I didn't order that.
If you use the term media sangue to refer to the preparation of your meal, What would the English equivalent of this term be?
Well, here's where you're wrong, because I do speak Italian. No. I think I can have a guess. This media, sangue.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sangue, I reckon, is related to blood.
Mm.
Like, yeah, that's the French word, I think, for blood is like sang or something. I'm going to say a media, medium. Mm-hmm. I reckon this could possibly be to have like a meat dish cooked medium rare.
Well done, and thanks for also spoiling the fact that was going to go with the answer. Sorry. So, no, very well done. 3.5 out of 5 for the round.
You know, I need every point I can get because I famously have been going incredibly poorly in previous weeks. I reckon I haven't won since episode 2.
Well, I mean...
Today could be the day.
Today, I mean, it's sounding like it could be the day.
I hope so. All right, Harley, your first round is Roger. Mm-hmm. Question 1. Name either of the influential 20th century British rock bands with drummers named Roger Taylor. The first has been active since 1970, though now performs with a new lead singer, while the second had their breakthrough album with the 1982 release Rio.
Hmm. I'm particularly stumped.
Yeah, right, okay.
For all bands of this era. 70s British rock. I'm just going to guess Led Zeppelin, knowing that I think they're a bit earlier than both of them.
Do you want to have a guess at... I'll give you two guesses, seeing as there's okay. Two bands.
Led Zeppelin and... I'm even struggling to think of a British band yep. That was popular in the 80s.
That's fair.
Like, well, Duran Duran's British... And I know they're... And the reason I'm thinking this is because the play that goes wrong, I remember seeing it in London, and there's a reference to Duran Duran in it, and that's the only other British band I can think of from the 80s.
Mate, you've absolutely backed your way into it. It's Duran Duran, and Queen is the other one.
Really?
Yeah, Queen performs with Adam Lambert as their lead singer. Well, I thought you had caught on to that, but Duran Duran, I thought, was the hardest one, harder of those two, and they had their album Rio was kind of their breakout CD. Yeah.
The only reason that Duran Duran come to mind, like I said, was because there's the gag in the play that goes wrong, where it's like, if anybody has seen my Duran Duran CD, please hand it in to an usher at your earliest convenience. And then, like, Hungry Like the Wolf comes on randomly and goes, just an update on the CD situation, it has been found.
Man, that play is so funny. I reckon it's the hardest I've ever laughed at that play.
Yeah,
it was so funny. I think we saw it at different times, though, I think, maybe. But...
Probably different productions.
Yeah, I think I saw it when I was in America.
Yeah, that was really... So it wouldn't have been a Duran Duran CD for yours.
Yeah, I'm not sure because it's still set like in a British... The premise of this play, for anyone that maybe isn't aware of it, is that it's an amateur like uni drama society putting on a murder mystery production loosely based on something like The Mousetrap by Agatha Christie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But everything goes wrong. Like the set falls to pieces. People forget their lines. And it's just kind of the kind of thing that if you're an actor, your biggest fear is being realised on stage of stuff that could go wrong when you're in a play. It's hilarious. I don't know if it'll come back to... I hope it does. It's very big budget.
It would be very big budget. Yeah. With like a set that keeps falling over every night.
Yeah.
Not sorry, spoilers, but...
It's literally in the title. No. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Well, that was my Bradbury for the week,
well
I reckon.
Done. All right, question 2. The phrase Roger that in radio communications traces its origins back to predecessors of the NATO phonetic alphabet. In those original alphabets, Roger and not Romeo stood in for the letter R, so was frequently used as shorthand for what R word, with which Roger is now synonymous. Do you need all that again?
No, I think I've... Like, my guess is it was probably right or, like, something along those lines. Right or...
Think a little bit more formal, maybe.
Right you are.
Righto, old chap.
Yeah. Right or... Literally nearly said Roger just then.
Roger equals Roger.
Mono equals Roger.
Rail equals rail.
Maybe it's rail. Write or recorded or... Look, recorded might be the only thing. It's like noted, kind of like I'm thinking of a word that means noted, basically, and recorded or, yeah, no, recorded is what I'll lock in.
You're very close. It's received. So essentially, yeah, rather than just saying received, received, received the whole time, say Roger, and that's R, which means received.
Tough break for me.
Tough miss. Question three. The Guinness World Records recognises Brazilian Rogério Ceni as having scored the most goals for any professional goalkeeper in soccer history. Within 10, how many goals did he score during his 25-year professional career, according to the Guinness World Records? And to make things a bit easier for you, just to give you a ballpark, the goalkeeper with the second most goals has made 67.
67?
That's the second most.
So these are goalkeepers that... I guess a goalkeeper can run out of the box. Like, if their team's dominating, they can just run to the front of the field. 60. Okay, because I was gonna say like 20 for Rogério.
That's what I didn't want you to. Yeah. I didn't want you to guess like too low. Like, okay, this number may not be around 67, but I'm just saying that, like, don't guess like 10.
Yeah. Well, that's where my mind was going. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, because that's what would happen, right? It wouldn't be like a case of him just having an awesomely accurate boot over 100 metres. It would be a case of his team just dominating and him leaving the box.
I don't want to give too much away about the circumstances of the goals or anything.
About Rogério.
But
yeah, in Golden Point and stuff, the keeper will get to kick from
that. I think it's called Golden Point in soccer.
Oh, whatever it's called. Penalty shootouts, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. So it is within 10. Yeah, so okay. It's like...
If 67th the second, I reckon Rogério was awesome at the whole Golden Point thing.
Yeah. Do you mean penalty shootout?
Screw you.
Okay.
I'm going to say 110.
You're very close. It's 129. So this number, I did quite a bit of research. This number varies a little bit depending on sources, but the Guinness World Records and the International Federation of Football History and Statistics both say 129. So that's what we're going to go with. Ceni also holds the record for longest career as both player and captain at a professional football club, according to Guinness World Records. And the majority of Ceni's goals came from penalties. So he was like a really good penalty shooter. In soccer, if you get fouled and you get a penalty...
Anyone can take it.
I think he was just amazing at penalties. So that was kind of the reason. He was a mac at penalties.
Yeah. That's interesting. Being talented at both penalties and goalkeeping.
Yeah, stopping penalties and scoring them. Yeah.
Good
stuff, Rogério.
In soccer or association football, if you hate fun and love being really annoying at parties, if you miss a penalty, isn't it free play?
So, do you mean as in like...
So...
Yeah.
Rogério's up there like in the opposite box. They've got the whole line of people that are going to jump when he kicks. If it hits off one of them, does he need to run 60 metres back and defend?
Well, I think he would have to. Because I guess the idea is if he sprays it up above the goal and it goes out, maybe there's a bit more time. But yeah, you're right. What if he gets it and the other goalie saves it and just chucks it upfield?
Yeah.
He's got to make it all the way back.
Yeah, Rogério. Have you thought about this?
Come on, Rogério. I mean, clearly it worked pretty well for him, but
yeah.
Rogério.
There you go.
Question number four. An unusually muscular animal named Roger went viral on the internet in the 2000s after being pictured holding a crushed metal bucket at his sanctuary in Alice Springs. What kind of animal was Roger?
I think I know. If it's an animal, you know, like Alice Springs, I don't think it's got a zoo. I think Roger was probably a jacked kangaroo. And being Australian, like for the foreign listeners, quite often you will see a kangaroo at the gym and they predominantly just do chest and arms, frankly. Like,
yeah, skipping leg day.
Yeah. On the Psalms from time to time.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It was kangaroo. I would love to like say the newspaper headline for this, and I hope it was like kangaroo jacked.
Nice, yeah.
That'd be good, right? Yeah. So Roger was rescued as an orphan Joey. He was trapped inside his dead mother's pouch when a man named Chris Barnes discovered him and decided to found a kangaroo sanctuary. So Roger stood at 6'7" and weighed 89 kilos before he died of natural causes in 2018. And it's really cute. Chris Barnes, the guy that saved him, and Roger grew up to be good mates, but they had their dust ups, and mostly when Roger lashed out, bit of roid rage maybe from Roger.
Yeah.
And on one occasion, he left Barnes requiring 6 stitches to his groin. Oh,
Roger!
Come on, Rog.
Yeah.
Big Rog.
Quite often. non-Australian friends, like foreign friends, will say, like, oh, I saw this video of this guy like fighting a kangaroo. And it's like,
yeah,
really dumb idea. Like,
yeah,
don't die.
Don't
fight a kangaroo.
Do you know this photo? Have you seen it with he's holding like a crushed bucket? He looks really strong.
I believe he could give you a fair old injury to the groin.
Yeah. Sore groin. Poor Chris. Okay. Question five. Your last question in Roger. I'm going to give you a line from a review by the late film critic Roger Ebert. You have to guess which film he was reviewing.
Great.
Okay? This is the start of the quote. How much he charges, I'm not sure, but the price is worth it if it keeps him off the streets and out of another movie. Blank is aggressively bad, as if it wants to cause suffering to the audience. The best thing about it is that it only runs for 75 minutes. Speaking in my official capacity as a Pulitzer Prize winner, Mr. Schneider, your movie sucks.
Okay, cool.
Is there anything you can glean from this?
When you say another movie, and you said blank and then told me it was Schneider, so I think that he's referring to a character specifically that might have doubled up in films. That's the logic that I'm running with.
I think blank here is the title of the movie. So like, blah, 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 the name of the movie is aggressively bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pay him or whatever. What was the quote?
I'm not sure how much he charges. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this was who I was thinking of, and I think he's appeared in two films. I think the character is Juice Bigelow, and I know that's critically panned.
Yeah.
There are two Juice Bigelow films, are there?
Well, I can't say I'm a connoisseur of the Juice Bigelow franchise and universe, but I think there are two.
Okay. I'm going to guess that the film is Juice Bigelow European Gigolo.
You've absolutely nailed it, mate. It is Juice Bigelow European Gigolo, which has a disastrous 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb. And it follows a titular character who's tricked into being a male sex worker in Amsterdam at a time when male sex workers are being murdered.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I think we should move on as quickly as possible before anyone can have the urge to go and watch this movie, because I don't think it's much good.
No.
I haven't seen it though, so I shouldn't really comment.
75 minutes is not a long movie.
It's not long at all. It really wrapped it up quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Efficient, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. He just sorted out the whole being murdered thing and just got back to his life.
Absolutely. So, Harley, at the end of Roger, you're at the end of round one, and you're on round three, and I'm just ahead on 3.5 points.
Round two.
What am I hearing questions about again, Harley?
You're hearing questions on Simpsons.
Fantastic.
And against your best wishes, there are very few questions about the television show The Simpsons.
I've been foiled.
And standard episodes of that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's get going on question number one. What stroke does former pop idol turned professional athlete Cody Simpson specialize in, having competed in the Commonwealth Games and with his sights set on the Olympics?
I have a lot of respect for Cody Simpson, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's really cool. Like, he's been on Broadway. He's been on the Commonwealth Games. He's been on The Masked Singer.
Yeah,
he's
just
accomplished a lot. I just think it's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he actually... Because I was like, okay, if I was going to become a pro at swimming, really, like, last minute... Not, I think he swam at quite a high level as a kid. But I think I'd be like, I'm going to do breaststroke. Because I feel like breaststroke is maybe one that you could really nail quickly. Like, it's probably a bit less labor intensive, maybe, even some of the other strokes. Like, I feel like it's less tiring. But I actually think he didn't take that approach. I think his approach is actually butterfly, which for me is the hardest of them. But I'm pretty sure Cody... Was Cody the butterfly when he was on The Masked Singer? That'd be appropriate.
Oh my goodness, was he actually?
No, I don't think he was.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, he went for butterfly. The Masked Singer as a show and a concept just infuriates me.
Really? Like, have you ever watched it?
No.
No,
but
you should.
The concept of it annoys me. It's like, what? What you're telling me is rugby player who played 10 years ago is not as good a singer as a professional singer?
Yeah.
No.
It's kind of only fun if people are revealed as being good singers if you don't expect it.
Yeah.
Like, T-Pain was, I think, one of the seasons of The Masked Singer in America. Spoilers. But you know how his voice is often auto-tuned?
Mm.
It, like, was his normal singing voice on this, and he was amazing.
Mm.
So that's, like, a nice surprise. But yeah,
yeah,
no one on the Australian version... Is that like the people who, when they take their mask off, who have been good singers, are professional singers normally?
Yeah,
normally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wendell Saylor's a pretty talented singer,
mate,
as well.
My life goal is to go on The Masked Singer. I would love to go on the Masked Singer.
Really?
Yeah, and
I might watch it if you were on.
I actually think it's within reach because, like, they're up to a few seasons now and the people are getting less and less famous.
Yeah.
Conceivably,
yeah.
If they got to, like, season 20, they'd be like, oh my God.
It's podcasted Jasper Bruce.
The fork has been revealed as journalist and podcasted Jasper Bruce. And everyone would be like, who the fuck is that? But then, like, they think that about a lot of the people currently anyway. So imagine what it'll be like in like 10 seasons time.
It'll be like, it's Danny Lim with the sign at the train stations in Sydney.
Mate, imagine if they got him on. Like, it's the chick chick boom girl from that video in 2008.
Yeah. In 1997, Fox and Pepsi launched a Simpsons house giveaway competition where one lucky winner could choose between a house closely modeled on the house owned by the Simpson family from the TV show, or $75,000 cash. The winner was from Kentucky, very far from where this house was, and opted for the cash prize. Where was the house actually built?
Wow. I thought that... Oh, no, you know, I think I'm just getting confused with the episode where Bart gets an elephant, and, like, he picks to get the... He has a similar thing on radio. He wins this radio thing. You either get $5,000 or you get an elephant, and he chooses the elephant, and they're like, no... That's not a real... That's a gag prize. You can't actually pick that. You have to pick the cash.
No, this house had been built.
But it did happen.
This house had been built, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a popular theory that the Simpsons house is actually in Oregon, but I don't know if this is like... Yeah, maybe that's a little bit too meta. A state that's far from Kentucky. It was in American Samoa. Not really a state. But somewhere far from Kentucky. Well, Kentucky... Famously fairly central-ish, I think.
It's kind of East Kentucky. It borders, like, the Carolinas, I'm pretty sure, and Georgia.
Right, okay. So sort of southeast, yeah.
And this is also... I'll give you half points for the state, full points for the city.
I'm going to guess that it was in... No, excuse me.
And I was going to say this is a notoriously cheap place to own a house.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe thinking low socioeconomic...
Not necessarily,
no? Okay.
But, you know, it's not like it's in, like, Oklahoma or like, Mississippi, but, well, Stardust just listening states is not in at this point. Maybe I'll just... It's a place that's notoriously cheap to own a house.
Well, I don't know that that's going to give it to me, unless it's in sort of somewhere that's quite not very densely populated. Maybe I'll go Nebraska and go it's in Omaha.
I can't give you the points for that, sorry. It was in Henderson City, Nevada.
Okay.
Henderson City is a satellite of Las Vegas, so Las Vegas, Nevada, I was going to kind of
give. Is it cheap to live there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, land tax is very cheap, land is abundant.
Mm.
And, I mean, you've been to Vegas. Like, did you go out in the suburbs? There's a lot of, like, developments of very... cheap looking housing.
Only en route to like going to like the Grand Canyon and stuff. Like, we didn't spend much time in the Vegas, so I guess why would you if you didn't live there?
Well,
house wasn't there.
Here's my why we didn't. We got a car on Churro, which the owner of was on holidays in Hawaii and didn't unlock it for us at the time he said he would. So we got to hang out in the Vegas suburbs for a couple of hours.
Was it good?
No.
Let's move on.
Simpsons is one of London's most noteworthy traditional English restaurants. Yum. Since its opening in 1828, it served as a tea house, a smoking room, and a professional chess venue.
Wow.
What Monopoly tile would you find this upscale establishment on?
Yes. This is so good. It's upscale.
Okay, yeah, it's not on Old Kent Road. No.
It's on the Angels Islington. I'm thinking we're talking the second half of the board. So from sort of like, I'm just thinking like in my head, there's the pink properties like Whitehall and Pall Mall going up. There's like Vine Street, Bow Street. And then I think the red one, is it red or yellow next? I'm just trying to, I think yellow is next and it's got like Piccadilly. Oh, maybe it's red. Anyway, I'm thinking it's from that end onwards. So like Fleet Street, Trafalgar Square, like that sort of pedigree maybe. If it's really upscale though, it might even be on the dark greens.
The dark greens or the blues.
The dark greens, the dark blues. Well, that'd be like, that'd be pretty fancy. Because I think professional chess venue, like that's pretty fancy, I guess. But like if they were having chess tournaments there, maybe it's like not the fanciest of the fancy. Because maybe really upscale people don't want to be disturbed from their abalone and caviar salad. I don't know if that's a thing, but Maybe they don't want to be disturbed by someone going.
I think you're grossly overestimating how fancy English food can get.
Checkmate. You gotta leave now. You gotta leave the restaurant.
What was that voice?
No voice.
Okay. No, I think chess is considered quite a refined thing when this... It was kind of new world and refined in the early 1900s.
Did you mean I'm overestimating English...
Food. I don't think they're having abalone. I think it's like very nice roast lamb with potatoes.
Yeah, I don't really want that if I'm going to a restaurant, to be fair.
Okay, then then avoid this Monopoly
I won't be going to Simpsons. In fact, I'll be going to KFC. No, I'm going to say that it's on...
KFC on Old Kent. This is actually called Simpsons
on something.
And the
Simpsons on Mayfair sounds pretty good.
Mm.
Simpsons on Oxford, Simpsons on Bond, Simpsons on Regent, or Simpsons on Regent Street sounds good. I'm gonna go Simpsons on Regent Street.
Unfortunately, Simpsons on the Strand.
Oh, that's pretty good as well.
It's a very fancy sounding establishment, good. Doesn't
Simpsons
it?
On the Strand. Yeah, I like that.
I'll meet you at Simpsons on the Strand. We can watch the chess tournament and then have a steak. I'll give you your Simpsons TV show question.
Excellent.
Which UK Prime Minister has served as a guest star playing himself in the Simpsons episode, The Regina Monologues?
Is this a certain...
He's made an appearance on the podcast.
Friend
before.
Of the show, even? Was he... Could we say that perhaps, like, if we went to Kosovo right now and talked to some people in their 20s, maybe we might have someone that are named after this Prime Minister?
Yeah.
It's going to be very confusing for anyone that hasn't listened to that episode yet. It's a bit of a spoiler. I actually remember this, and I remember his Simpsons likeness. And I know that it is Tony Blair, otherwise known as Tony Blair.
Correct. You are correct. It's Tony Blair. Also starring in that episode is J.K. Rowling and Sir Ian McKellen.
Oh, wow.
I know.
There you go.
The people the Simpsons bump into when they're just visiting another country.
Yeah, mate. When I go to England, all I bump into is like other Aussies. Like someone's brother's cousin that's saying like, we should catch up if you're in town.
Well, you should go to this place called Simpsons on the Strand. It's mainly locals.
Excellent. Locals and chess players.
Okay, final question. Which Australian states/territories does the Simpson Desert span?
Ooh, this is pretty outback. I reckon we're talking like Northern Territory, South Australia. Do we know how many there are?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. It's three.
Three? Okay. I reckon it's those two, definitely. And it's either going west or going into Queensland, maybe. But I reckon... I reckon it might be one of those ones that's only just touching this third state. Because I think if you think of it as like very much Northern Territory and South Australia... I'm going to say Northern Territory, Queensland and South Australia.
You're correct. Yes. You are correct. It is the home to the world's longest parallel sand dunes.
Really?
And it has sand dunes up to 40 metres in height.
Whoa.
Yeah.
As in like a sheer cliff?
I don't know. I did this in a bit of a rush, to be honest, but yeah.
If it was 40 metres just rolling down, I reckon that it could be a really fun day.
Yeah, just run down the sand dunes.
Just like, well, remember when we used to go up the coast to Foster for holidays and there was a sand dune there you could like run down? And it was pretty fun. You couldn't really make it to the end without falling over, though.
Yep, I know.
And this one's 40 minutes. How high was that one, do you reckon? That was maybe like 15, 20?
Yeah.
So this is double the dune.
Double the dune, double the fun.
Double the dune, double the fun. I believe that's the sequel to Dune that's starring Timothée Chalamet. It's in cinemas at the moment.
Yep.
Timothée Chalamet.
Okay. At the end of that round, a very venerable.
Ooh.
3 from 5.
Very, very... I'm happy with that. I know that. All right, your second round. I'm dreading it. So I've tried to make this a little bit of a mix of questions about literal, like, dread. The word dread comes up in a couple of them. But also just, like, experiences that it's like, oh, that's a bit gross. I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
Okay? Question one. Having a rat crawl in your bed would be enough to make most children fearful. But in Spanish and Hispanic American cultures, on what specific occasion is the fantastical creature... El Ratoncito Perez said to visit children as they sleep.
El Ratoncito Perez.
El Ratoncito Perez.
On a specific occasion.
Yeah, he comes to children in their bed. Not in a weird way.
It's just friendly.
He's nice, yeah. He's a nice bedtime visitor. I've said too much.
Like, and it's like a holiday kind of experience.
Well, it's like something might happen, and he comes.
I think I might know this. I think the wonderful people in the Hispanic part of our world have decided that rather than giving a tooth fairy to pick up teeth, they give a rat to pick up teeth and give off parasites, I reckon.
That's correct. Rather than a coin, you get the plague. Fantastic. Ratoncito Perez is indeed a Spanish version of the Tooth Fairy. He dates back to at least the late 1800s. The author Luis Coloma developed most of the mythology associated with Raton Perez when he was commissioned to write a story for then 8-year-old King Alfonso XIII, who had just lost a tooth. And in that story, Raton Perez lives with his family in a box of cookies in the basement of a shop in Madrid and often runs away from home to visit children who have lost their teeth. And as he sort of goes through pipes and stuff, he has to bamboozle cats that he meets in his travels and kind of escape. Which sounds like a great story.
If I have kids, I'm going to tell them that the tooth rat is coming instead of the tooth fairy.
I think he's quite like a celebrant. I think it's not like, oh no, he's coming. It's like, yay, Ratoncito Perez is visiting.
Yeah.
I think it's like something to be happy about. Yeah. So it's not really dreading it at all, is it actually? It's more no. I'm welcoming it.
I'm welcoming
the
rats.
Maybe
that'll be next week. Who knows?
All right, question two. Which rock band was hired to write an original song for the Sylvester Stallone film Judge Dredd, only to pull out of the project when guitarist Richie Edwards disappeared, never to be seen again?
Okay. Well, I know the story of Richie Edwards. Mm-hmm. And so we won't beat around the bush because we do a lot of waffling on this show.
That's so much waffle.
A lot of waffle.
Waffle House.
Richie Edwards was the guitarist of Manic Street Preachers.
That's correct. The Welsh band Manic Street Preachers. Edwards disappeared on the 1st of February 1995, the day he was supposed to fly to America for a promotional tour, with his movements in the days before the disappearance disputed in the years since. And the song Judge Yourself, which was written for the film, was actually the last written while Edwards was actually still in the band and eventually was released in 2003. But I think, just given the circumstances, they were a bit reticent to release it, which is pretty understandable. You actually kind of get into the Manic Street Preachers a bit, don't you?
It's one of my favorite bands to just kind of to listen to, like, while on a bus or when traveling. I don't know, there's something kind of airy and movie and urban about it, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm not a particularly dedicated fan or anything, and I've long wondered. My guess is that they're street preachers who are, like, manic. It's not like the street preachers on a street called Manic Street.
Yeah, I actually do wonder about that.
Yeah.
The street preachers. Yeah, I think it's got to be the first one. The street preachers that are a bit manic rather than...
The things that keep us up.
Go to Manic Street because there are preachers there if you want to get your sins repented for. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Question three. Famous for her dreadlocks, which television host, actress, and EGOT recipient was born Karen Elaine Johnson on November 13, 1955?
Okay, this one, there's one TV host, and I know that she's very, very talented, who comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that it'd be Miss Whoopi Goldberg, perhaps?
Mate, you're storming through it. It is indeed Whoopi Goldberg. So Goldberg is one of only 19 entertainers to have won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. She was the first African-American to do it, and only the fourth woman to accomplish that feat.
What did she win an Oscar for?
Best Supporting Actress for Ghost.
Actually, I knew that she... Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it myself, but she was nominated as well for The Color Purple for Best Leading Actress. She also, too... do you know how she got her name?
No.
Literally have a guess.
She farted?
Yeah. Her last name, Goldberg, was taken from a Jewish ancestor. And of her first name, she told Reuters in 1997, "I happen to be gaseous," which explains the first name, short for whoopee cushion.
Jesus.
There you go. Because I've always thought that.
So what we're hearing is she could be called Thunderpants Goldberg.
Thunderpants Goldberg.
There you go.
All right. Question four in I'm Dreading It. A decade before winning the 1940 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, which author wrote an unpublished werewolf mystery novel entitled Murder at Full Moon? The novel tells of a Californian town gripped by fear after a series of murders, but the late author's estate has refused requests for the publication of the manuscript.
Okay. If the author's estate is refusing to, I'm going to guess that it's not someone that wrote that kind of novel much before, because, like, people would be calling out for... It's not that Arthur Conan Doyle is in contention, but people would be calling out for, like, a new Agatha Christie novel.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to guess that this one might have drawn a bit of ire from the family or the person.
Yeah.
And Californian, 1940. Mm-hmm. When I think of Californian and... 1940 is a bit late in the chronology, but definitely still alive was John Steinbeck. So that's who... And he definitely would have won Pulitzer's and all sorts of awards. I'm gonna. Did he say Pulitzer Prize winning?
Yeah, he won the This person won the 1940 Pulitzer Prize.
I'm gonna say John Steinbeck.
You're absolutely correct. Another friend of the show, John. He's come up a couple of times. Well, he might not be a friend of the show after we've brought this up. He'll be an enemy of the show.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually got a copy of this, and I'm gonna blackmail him.
Okay. You know what though? I'm gonna tell you about this novel. It sounds awesome. Steinbeck wrote Murder at Full Moon under the pseudonym Peter Pym in 1930, some 9 years before publishing his masterwork, Grapes of Wrath. Steinbeck's thought to have written two other unpublished novels that have since been destroyed, but Murder at Full Moon does survive. It includes, the manuscript includes two illustrations by Steinbeck of like a floor plan of where the events of the novel happened, and it features a cunning young reporter, a mysterious gun enthusiast, and an eccentric sleuth attempting to solve the murders that have apparently been caused by a werewolf. Currently, Murder at Full Moon is stored in the archives of the Harry Ransom Center at the University of Texas. Honestly, I would read the shit
out of this. That sounds so good.
Sounds great.
I quite like Steinbeck.
You're a big fan.
I reckon if I was like an eccentric billionaire, I would try to buy the manuscript and like have like kind of like the Once Upon a Time in Shaolin thing where you can have reading parties, you can read it yourself, but you can't republish it or anything.
Yeah, yeah, like when I... big farmer guy Martin Shkreli bought the Wu-Tang Clan
That's Once Upon a Time in Shaolin I'd have that. Can you imagine like you and all your mates sitting around reading some Steinbeck and it's like that's 10 pages guys, we'll have to wait till my next party.
That'd be awesome. And like it's in the archives of this university, so we know where it is. It's not like it's been lost. Presumably some people have read this, right?
Yeah
like if you're working at the university, a bit of a quiet day, you know, like got a frat party later on, but got a few hours skill. Surely you just go on the archive, like...
have a read of it. Yeah, I would be.
If you worked there, presumably you could actually do that and not even get in trouble.
The mystery, though, if it was, like, just sitting on someone's bookshelf or in, like, an op shop somewhere, would be so much cooler.
Yeah, it would be better, hey.
Like, who's this Peter Pym in his... What?
Yeah. Okay, question five.
Question five?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're on 4 out of 4 here.
What? Okay.
You're killing this.
Oh, shit.
Question five. After outbreaks of pubic lice and scabies and 2 months of negotiations with the Teamsters Union, in June 2001, which iconic American establishment scrapped a rule that required workers to wear, quote, communal underwear?
What?
I heard it. Yeah. Somewhere where people had to wear communal underwear.
I got no idea. I'm going to go maybe the Bunny Ranch in Nevada.
What's the Bunny Ranch?
It's the actually, no, the Bunny Ranch is in Texas. That's the one that ZZ Top's named LaGrange is after, I think. I'm just gonna say the Bunny Ranch, even though the fact that you don't know it kind of indicates that it's probably...
gives it away a bit.
Yeah.
Mate, it was actually the grottiest place on earth, Disneyland.
Why do they have to... Oh, because...
So, regular underwear would become bunched and visible under the costumes of actors portraying characters in Disneyland. So, they had special underwear they had to use that wouldn't be noticeable. But each night, actors... And I don't think it was every character, but I think certain roles required Disney-issued jockstraps, tights, or bike shorts to be worn. And each night, they would turn their underpants in before going home and pick up a different set the next day. So, after the change, performers were issued with their own personal undergarments that they could take home each day. Okay, so at the end of I'm Dreading It, you've picked up 4 points. So, you're just ahead, heading into round 3 on 7 points, and I'm on 6.5.
Round 3.
So, we've got it all to play for here, heading into round number 3. What am I hearing questions about again in round 3, Holly?
Girl boss.
Fantastic.
Fantastic indeed. Kicking it off, we've got literally a girl boss question. Businesswoman Whitney Wolf Heard is credited as the founder and co-founder of what two wildly popular smartphone apps, which are of much the same category?
I think I know this. I think she was a co-founder for the first one, possibly, and the actual main founder of the second one. And I am just stalling a bit to give people a bit of time to think. But I'm going to say that the apps are Tinder and Bumble, perhaps.
Absolutely correct.
Fantastic.
And the story goes, I think there's, you know, clauses that she can't really talk about it, that she left Tinder with some sort of a payout, perhaps with some sort of workplace disagreements, and with that money founded Bumble.
Yeah, wow, there you go.
Yeah, because I don't... And I think she kind of got a bit stitched up out of the profits of Tinder.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not 100% sure, though, because I think it's all a bit shrouded.
Yeah, maybe NDAs and stuff around that.
Yep, well done. First question
hit out of the park. Second question, who is the longest serving elected female head of state in history, having spent 16 years and 16 days at the helm of this country?
I think we did a question about this that actually debunks this. Well, I know who you... Okay. Do you mean for like one specific stint? Like one...
Oh, yeah. One... Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it would be. But I reckon someone's going to pass this. We had a question similarly like about this a few weeks ago.
Did we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Oh, man. I've been drinking too much.
No, but you... It wasn't quite this, but I remember this specific stat of 16 years and 16 days. So I know that cumulatively, the Prime Minister of Bangladesh has served for longer than this person, but in two separate stints. So the person who had the longest stint was Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany.
And the PM of Bangladesh that you were speaking of?
Sheikh Hasina.
Sheikh Hasina, who's currently been serving for just over 15 years.
Yeah, I think she came back in 2009 after having previously served before that.
So not only once again did you get the question right, but you also ruined the fact that I had to follow up. Well, mate, done.
If you listened to the questions you were asked in previous episodes, you wouldn't be in this mess.
Man, what are we, 7 episodes in already reusing material?
Repeats. Oh, bloody reruns.
Okay, well done. 2 from 2 in so far. Kate McHugh's Instagram describes her as a red soul rockin' mum to Wonderluster Bug Naked, referring to her Sphinx cat.
Okay.
But what is she noteworthy as being the first American woman to command or lead?
This question is hilarious. Describes her as...
Red soul rockin' mum.
Soul rockin' mum
to Wonderluster at Bug Naked. Bug Naked being her Sphinx cat.
I don't want to make fun of this lady, but there's just so many funny words in that sentence.
Yeah, I know. That's why I put it in.
I was focusing on Bug Naked. What...
And she describes her cat as a wanderluster.
Wanderluster likes a bit of travel.
Mm.
So she's the first woman to lead a specific thing.
She's noteworthy as being the first American woman to command or lead what?
Yeah, so like we're talking like Air Force or like Coast Guard or something like that maybe, or like or more a private enterprise.
I wanted to leave it broad because if I narrow it down, you go, oh well, she's leading a head of a military unit. There's six in America now.
Okay, well I think this actually could be maybe an airline potentially. Maybe the fact that you know this and wanderlusting cat, Bug Naked. Think about Bug Naked, mate.
I think Bug Naked's the key, but how does an airline pilot have a cat that comes with them around the world?
Well, better than having that in like the cockpit of like an Air Force jet.
Like a fighter. Going through
like G-Force and then like...
Talk to me, Bug Naked.
Oh, please end all communications with over, Bug Naked. This is your pilot speaking.
Yeah.
This is your pilot. We're cruising at normal altitude and Bug Naked is sitting in the cockpit. No, my pilot voice wasn't very convincing there. I am stalling here. Travel, like a travel company or a cat company. Maybe. Maybe like she works for like a pet shop or like wanderlusting cat. Bug Naked. Oh, Sphinx Cat. She's the first female CEO of Egypt. I have no idea. I'm going to say she's the first female CEO of the Navy. First female commander of the Navy.
Okay. Now, so she was the first woman to command a mega class cruise ship, the first American woman to.
Oh, okay.
And so she became a captain of the cruise ship, the Celebrity Summit. In 2015.
Oh, cool.
Capacity of over 3,000 people. And I must say, cats being territorial animals can probably come to terms with, like, being able to chill on the bridge and in, like, the captain's quarters of a cruise ship. I think Bug Naked is a hilarious name for a Sphinx cat, by the way.
Yeah, because they're the ones without, like, fur, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just caught up on the fact that I just called someone the CEO of the Navy. That's ridiculous.
Question 2 from 3 so far.
Mm-hmm.
Question number 4, I'm confident you'll have a good idea on.
Great.
Who is the tough leader of the all-girl gang, the Pink Ladies, in Greece?
Well, okay, so let's not get this twisted, okay? Because Greece? Great.
This is the film Greece I was talking about.
Well, okay, so famously, the leader of the T-Birds, Danny Zuko,
mm.
gets together with not the head of the Pink Ladies.
Mm.
And that's why it's controversial. They were so different. Oh my God, Sandy, we're never going to last together at this school.
Rydell High, I believe.
Rydell High was the school, yeah. Okay, it's not Sandy. It is, I believe, Betty Rizzo as portrayed by Stockard Channing in the film.
Well, once again, you got the question right and you've ruined my my fun fact. Mm. Betty is Rizzo's first name. Didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I did know it.
Well done.
Thank
you. 3 from 4. Final question.
I was in a uni production of Grease, played Vince Fontaine and wore a very tight silver suit. Some people listening may even remember that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun. Could you go and just dance and have my silly radio voice?
Exactly. And look how far your silly radio voice has got you now.
Well, now I'm doing silly radio voice and people are listening by choice.
But yeah. Well, we kind of make them, but anyway. Yeah,
family and friends kind of forced to. Sorry, guys.
Yep. Final question for the game for you, Jasper.
Mm-hmm.
What did Kim Kardashian say was her best advice for women and business in a much mocked 2022 interview?
I don't remember this.
You don't remember it at all?
I don't, no. Her best advice for women.
For women and business. She said, I have the best advice for women and business, and then this much mocked quote.
Rename yourself after Whoopee Cushions and you'll win a lot of entertainment awards. How about get a Sphinx cat?
Get a Sphinx cat and call it Buck Naked.
Get a Sphinx cat and before long you'll be CEO of the Navy. No, I don't know, actually. Okay, maybe if it was mocked a lot, maybe it was something quite shallow and stupid. Like,
yeah,
to be a good leader, you need to get your nails done or something like bullshit like
or,
that.
Probably. Or something even tone deaf.
Yeah, true. Oh, yeah, you know what? It'd be something like... Yeah, you're so right. It'd be something like, get a luxury car or something like, well, cheers, Kim. We can't really afford that, maybe.
Mm.
I'm going to say...
I'm shook that you haven't seen this clip.
I reckon... Daily massages, because I reckon it's something that like a decadent rich person would go, nah, like you can make time for that. It's only an hour a day. And like, I'm going to say get a massage a lot.
Her advice was, and I quote, and you'll have to get the bleeping machine out when we edit this, it's get your fucking ass up and work. It seems like nobody wants to work these days. And, you know, the daughter of like a celebrity's lawyer living in Beverly Hills or Bel Air or wherever it was. Yeah. Making money from releasing a sex tape and then having her own reality TV show.
Yeah.
Most people looked at that and went, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit silly, I got to say.
It's very belligerent the way that she says it. It's like very sassy. We'll watch it afterwards.
It reminds me a bit of, do you remember like when the Muffin Break CEO came out a few years ago and was like, when I started as a CEO of this Muffin Foundation, people used to come to me, teenagers used to come to me begging for free work, begging to cook muffins for free, and it doesn't happen anymore. Teenagers are lazy. That's not a real quote, by the way. But you remember that when she came out and was like, teenagers never work for free anymore?
No, I don't. But then I don't keep Muffin Break as close to my business searches as perhaps you do.
Yeah, I love Muffin Break. And you know what? It hasn't made me like less hungry for Muffin Break. I still love Muffin Break, even if the CEO is a bit
weird. Maybe you should go and for free learn to cook the muffins so you can cook them at home.
That's a great idea. She'll never see it coming. She'll be like, this is a young man with a work ethic. Who cares about the muffin industry? Like, modern teenagers tend not to.
That's also so weird. Like, such a large chain... that you'd go straight to the CEO and say, hey, I'm open to slave labor.
I want to cook muffins for free. Please, will you let me? Like, why would anyone... What? Like...
Yeah. Oh, there you go. No, it does sound... It sounds like she might be a Kardashian.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to your final category, please explain.
Oh, wait. What did you end up getting for that one? You got 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5.
So that puts you on...
That means I'm on 9.5.
9.5.
Points. So you're currently on 7. So you need to get 3 points to win.
Yep.
Okay. Please explain. Question 1. What question from 60 Minutes journalist Tracy Curro prompted controversial Australian politician Pauline Hanson to utter the now infamous line, please explain, during a 1996 interview? I won't nitpick here, but there is one specific word that I need to hear to give points.
So annoying that I didn't like brush up on even the basic of
this. I gotta say, when you're asking for please explain in Australia, this is the most iconic please explain that you expect, right?
I know it was, I have a feeling it was like, are you a racist or something like that.
Okay.
But I feel like she would be, because famously, for people that don't remember, Pauline Terlilua, and she's another friend that did the Pauline Pants Down episode get released?
That's happened, yep. Pauline, so, I would say, is a friend of the show at this point.
Yeah,
so we've got Walt Disney, Pauline Hanson.
We're in esteemed company.
Yeah, we've got Walt Disney, Pauline Hanson.
And John Steinbeck.
Blair, John Steinbeck.
Yeah, yeah.
Who else? Mike Tyson's come up a bit. What do you think Mike Tyson and Pauline Hanson would talk about at a dinner party?
I don't know. I would have thought that if she was asked, are you a racist, she would have had like a surefire, like, I'm not a racist kind of answer. I think it would have been like... I think it would have been something a little bit more informative and a little bit more challenging.
So definitely on the right lines.
Something along the lines of like... something like... what are your policies regarding the future of immigration of Australia, or something like that?
Okay, so you came very close, but the question was, are you xenophobic? So this was why she said police claim, because she didn't know what xenophobic meant. So that's what I meant about, like, needing to be a little bit specific, because are you racist? She would have known what that means. So Kara replied saying, xenophobia means a fear of all things foreign, with Hanson then denying she was xenophobic after learning what the word meant. Hanson has in fact called for Muslim immigration to be banned in Australia, claimed that halal certification in Australia helped to fund terrorism, and in her maiden Senate speech in 2016 said that Australia was, quote, being swamped by Muslims. So, I mean, whether she is actually not xenophobic, possibly up for debate. Question two, in Please Explain. In 1969, which future US president claimed to have seen an unidentified flying object in the night sky in Leary, Georgia? 4 years later, while serving as state governor, this person officially reported his sighting at the request of the International UFO Bureau.
Okay, so 1969, he was noted for seeing strange things in Georgia.
Yeah.
I think the answer is probably Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
Because I know that he also... have you heard the story of the rabbit swimming thing?
Yeah, can you refresh my memory about what was this?
I can't remember it exactly, but he... basically, he was a bit obsessive at times, Jimmy Carter, as a president, from what I understand. Like, he used to personally approve the tennis court schedule in the White House.
Mm.
And he... this is going to be really awkward if it's not Jimmy Carter, but George just seems to give it away a bit to me.
Yep.
He was out fishing once in, like, a rowboat by himself while he was the president, and he claimed to have seen a rabbit swim from one side of the lake to the other.
Wow.
And he was, like, telling people who, like, rabbits don't swim, Jimmy. That just didn't happen. And apparently he got a little bit obsessive over it, and it became, like, a bit of a media thing.
Wow.
And I think as it... Actually, maybe other people were around and didn't see the rabbit or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But essentially, he was vindicated because rabbits can
swim. Rabbits can swim. There you go. Oh, that's massive vindication.
Anyway, if you turn around now and say it was Bill Clinton, I'm going to be very... Well, he wasn't a... No, he was governor of Arkansas, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was Jimmy Carter. Cool. For sure. I wouldn't let you do that if it hadn't been. Yeah, according to Carter, he saw the object in the night sky on an October evening at roughly 7:15 p.m. while waiting for a Lions Club meeting. He said the object was at one stage as bright as the moon. It was silent, sharply outlined, and appeared to change colour. Carter's quoted as calling it the darndest thing he'd ever seen. There, you can actually as well find this report that he sent to the UFO Bureau. It's
so,
like,
he called it the darndest thing in his report, did he?
Yeah.
So a rabbit swimming may have been more darned.
Was it darnder, do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. It's the darndest thing he'd ever seen to that point before he saw a rabbit swimming.
You can actually find the
report. You can find the reports online. His handwriting is incredibly illegible, and it's also, like, kind of old because it looks like it's been, like, maybe photocopied when photocopies weren't as good. But yeah, it's, I found it online. It's quite interesting.
There you go.
Question three. Gyroscopic theory and caster theory are two competing hypotheses that attempt to explain how what everyday item works.
Caster and gyroscopic everyday item.
Yeah. It's maybe not something that you'd have in your house, literally, but I would think a household would have maybe one of these or a few of these.
Caster and gyroscopic.
I think think about gyroscopic, I reckon, more.
What kind of a gyroscope? Oh. You know what I think it could be?
I think it could be to do with some sort of like a washing machine kind of thing. Because Jairus, like, I don't personally have a washing machine, but every household has got one.
I personally wash my clothes.
I mooch off someone else. And like this, but is anyone really thinking, sitting down and thinking how a washing machine works? Like,
it's something that if you think about, it's something that scientifically, like if you think about how this is actually able to work, it's kind of hard to explain, but it just works. And
okay, I'm gonna guess that it's a microwave then, because microwaves have the spinning dish.
Okay.
Well, most of them do. Very old timey ones, like our grandparents don't, and it wigs me out. And maybe it works on the cast principle.
Okay, so you're looking microwave.
I'm gonna go microwave.
It's actually a bicycle. So these are theories that attempt to explain how a bicycle is able to stay upright while in motion. So essentially, scientists can't agree why a bicycle, which is a two-wheeled vehicle that can't stand up when it's not moving, is able to stand up so well when it is moving.
I would have thought the jury had deliberated long enough on this one.
So, well, let me tell, and I'm just going to show you, don't look at the other answers, but look at how long this paragraph of explanation about this is, okay?
Okay, yeah, don't read that.
I'm going to tell you about some of it. The gyroscopic theory says that the spinning of the wheels on the bike provides enough stability to stop it from falling over.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The caster theory is a little bit different. So, okay, you know how if you go to shop, like shopping trolley or like a swivelly chair.
I know how castering works. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know what this was.
Have you never ridden a ripstick?
No, I never have actually. Yeah, ripstick, same thing. So you know how there's like the little wheels and like the little bit of metal that comes out of the wheel, the axle, isn't in line with the middle of the wheel. You know, yeah. It's kind of like off to the side. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that like if you're screwing around on a wheelie chair and you just like muck about for a bit, the wheels eventually straighten up.
Mm-hmm. The wheelie chair invented by Thomas Edison.
No, Charles Darwin, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Was it Charles Darwin?
It was Charles Darwin.
Man, I called the episode Pre-Darwinian Chairs because if it wasn't him, it would be bad. Yeah, okay, so that's essentially, yeah, that's what a caster is essentially, yeah, right? Yeah. I didn't know this before today. And the caster theory is essentially that the bike steering axis is behind the wheel's contact with the ground, creating like a reverse caster effect. So the bike lines up behind the front wheel and that's what keeps it upright. Essentially is what the caster theory says. Okay. But modern day scientists agree that neither is completely responsible for the bike's stability. So they're both kind of like might help a little bit, but they're kind of not like saying, no, there's more at play here. We don't know how deep this goes.
I'm amazed that we're not really sure how bicycles work.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, but Google it. Like, there's no scientific consensus about it. Question 4. Which word is thought to trace back to author Rebecca Solnit, who wrote an essay in 2008 that featured an anecdote about a party guest interrupting her as she was talking about a book she had written?
I reckon I know this.
Do you?
Well, this is a fairly new word about people interrupting women.
Okay.
And I believe, for those of you who don't know what it is...
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I think it sounds like it might be the word mansplaining.
That's correct. So Solnit didn't use the word mansplaining in her essay, Men Explain Things to Me, Facts Didn't Get in Their Way, hilarious name, which was widely shared online. But her essay is credited as having articulated that concept as we now know it.
Mm.
And I'm aware of the irony of two men telling people what mansplaining is on a podcast, yeah. So don't bother pointing that out.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But yeah, mansplaining is correct there. So I've just run the numbers in my head. For you to win the game, you need to get this right.
No.
And if you don't get it right,
I lose. What if I get a half point? Is this like a halfie kind of
half
question?
Point ties the game. There might be, but let's see. Okay, in 2004, chocolate manufacturer Cadbury issued a Canberra-born naturalist with a please explain at the Australian Trademarks Tribunal after he changed his name to reflect his interest in investigating and finding a specific mythical being. Name this unexplained identity, which the naturalist claimed to have seen in the Australian bush. So Cadbury had a problem having a go.
So he changed his name for...
So this guy's changed his name, and I'll tell you what his name is and it'll make sense, but like his name has been changed to reflect his interest in like finding this specific unexplained being.
And Cadbury had a problem.
Cadbury had a go at him.
I'm trying to think of what, like, the Cadbury chocolates are.
Yeah.
Like...
It's Easter coming out, mate. This is very fit.
Quinkin chocolate? I don't know. Rainbow Serpent? Is there...
That'd be delicious.
But no one's out there like imagine like going, I saw the rainbow serpent. Like it was like 5 kilometers long and it was creating rivers in the outback. Yeah. No one's
Can you imagine like a rainbow serpent chocolate? That would be delicious. Like it's like rainbow ice cream flavoured.
Yeah.
I would like that. That'd be good.
Is there but like maybe the rainbow serpent very well could be like confectionery.
Okay.
But no one's out there claiming that they saw the rainbow serpent.
That's true, yeah. Gosh, I saw the rainbow serpent. Oh, where is it? Oh, no, it's gone now. I'm going to have to push you for an answer, man.
I'll just go the rainbow serpent.
Okay, I think you're going to kick yourself. Yeah. It's the Yowie.
The Yowie?
The Yowies? Like the chocolates?
No.
Really? Have you never heard of that?
Have they made them recently?
No, they were not anymore, but they were popular when we were kids. They've got like a little toy in the middle.
Really?
And like Yowie, like it's
Kinder
like...
Kinder Surprise. I vaguely know that a Yowie is like a Quinkin.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that's less exciting than if you don't remember this.
I don't actually remember the chocolate, but why did they... like? So he changed his name to Yowie.
So Tim the Yowie Man is this guy's name. Cadbury had challenged Timothy Bull's application to trademark the name in 2000, but the Australian Trademarks Tribunal ruled that it was unlikely children would confuse Tim the Yowie Man with Cadbury's chocolate of the same name. Timothy Bull has used his Yowie alias since the mid-1990s, and he still writes a column for the Canberra Times under that name that explores adventure and science. He honestly sounds like a legend, this guy.
He does.
Yeah, I don't want to make it like we're laughing at Tim the Yowie Man.
How long ago was this lawsuit?
2004.
See, that was my pre-primary school thing. Like, yeah. I remember you having something... Because I think I always thought that the toys were Yowies. I thought maybe it was the kind of thing that... Mum bought you to shut you up.
You know the thing though, don't you? Like the chocolate. Can you picture it? It's like a sort of chocolate thing. No, okay.
Is it like an egg with legs or something?
No, it's kind of like...
I reckon they'd gone out of vogue by the time I was able to discern what chocolate... I remember Mum always giving me caramel at koalas when you got a chocolate.
Yeah. This thing, it's like... It's got something in the middle. It's like a toy, I think, in the middle. Like a little, like, doodad in the middle. And it's like hollow Easter Bunny style chocolate, essentially.
There you go.
I went to... When I was in Launceston a few years ago for Brass Band Nationals, shout out, there was like this old-timey chocolate shop and they had Yowies. And honestly, they tasted like they were from about 2004. All right, well, I'm sorry, that's a bit of an anticlimactic way to end, but it looks like to finish out today, I've ended up on 9.5 points, and Harley, you've ended up on 9 points.
Jasper, you are the champ. Harley, you are the chump.
So that concludes today's episode of Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. We just wanted to drop a note here as well and say we're going to take a little break over Easter. Now, I'm going away for the weekend. I've got our cousin's wedding coming up over Easter as well. So it's a bit of a busy time, but we'll be back with a vengeance to finish off season one. If you like our show, we'd love it if you could please give us a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice. And if you want to, you can get in touch, triviachamp@gmail.com or via Instagram at triviachamp or triviachump.
Mm-hmm.
But when we come back from our break, Harley, you'll have the chance to redeem yourself. How are you feeling now that you've fallen behind a little bit on the podcast?
I just think I need to get up off my fucking ass and work. It seems like no one wants to work these days.
Sounds good, mate. Look forward to seeing the result of your hard work when we next meet here on Champ or Chump. Thanks for listening.
Good chow.
Trivia is the real winner here. I think we can all agree.